Welcome, everyone. This is Liberty Southwest podcast number 30. Today is October 27, 2014, and this week we will talk about FATCA, Foreign Account Taxation Compliance Act, which is a piece of legislation that aims to bring more tax revenue into the IRS that is either earned or moved offshore by corporations and individuals. And tonight, we are joined by Eric Taylor, Chelsea Camo, Danny Ning, and Kirk Pettis. And Eric, you want to take it away?
Sure. So this was a topic that you mentioned, Kirk, a few weeks ago, which looks to, well, it doesn't look. It's the Treasury and IRS initiative to capture more revenue that's tax revenue from dollars that have been moved overseas or have been generated through overseas activity by expatriates or current U.S. citizens. So this is something that's, Kirk, you picked up off of, was it off of the Sovereign Man, or was there, were you reading or listening to a podcast in the recent past that kind of went over this? This is real recent legislation, right? I think it was really put into effect on July 1st of this year, passed in 2010. This is something that you kind of heard about and was basically another scheme for the U.S. government to capture more tax revenue, correct?
Yeah, that's when I really came into realizing that this law was enacted. It was around July 1st and hearing about it, that it was being, you know, coming into law at that time. But, you know, I just think that's the excuse of this whole matter, personally, is that it's to acquire tax revenue that is from individuals that are not in full compliance. But that's a topic we will get to further on in the podcast. But, I don't know, I thought it'd be a good topic to talk about for, I mean, what jurisdiction does IRS have over the world to force other foreign businesses to comply with U.S. law? And then I thought, you know, we have Chelsea and Danny, who are both accountants, that, you know, we would have a good topic to hash through and talk about. Really, this has a lot to do with liberty and being a liberty podcast. I really feel this would be a good topic.
Right. Yep. And I think we were talking about this before the show, that the most likely method that the United States has to enforce this is the military. If you don't comply, then there are consequences that way.
Well, it's not only that. It's because the dollar is the reserve currency. So if the banks don't comply, they're forced kind of out of the loop. And so if you want to be a part of the party, you got to be a part of this law. And so it's a great way to enact more of a global governance legislation and compliance in a worldwide set, even though it's just from one individual country. Even though we are the superpower, I find it outrageous that we can push this on the world.
Well, it sounds like the way that they're really forcing other countries to comply with a law that is, you know, having to do with America and not these countries is through fines and then saying, well, we're going to take a financial attack, you know, and cut you out of our markets. And that's basically been the threats that have been effective enough for them to fine, you know, the Swiss banking system with $2.6 billion fines.
Adios.
And then the threat of some other countries if they didn't comply. So even Russia and China have complied with this just because of the financial threats and fines that they've put into place.
How they can make
that legal to enforce, I have no idea.
I actually read that Russia and China have opted not to comply up to this point. Russia has an outright said that they won't comply, but they currently aren't complying. And China has said that there is no specific verbiage in their law that allows them to comply with FATCA. I think kind of the direct quote that I saw of a Wikipedia article is the Deputy Director General of Legal Affairs of the People's Bank of China, the Central Bank of the People's Republic of China, Louis Xiangham, said China's banking and tax laws and regulations do not allow financial institutions to comply with FATCA directly. And that's pretty much their stance. And the U.S. Treasury Department suspended negotiations with Russia in March of 2014, but Russia hasn't ruled out
an agreement. Annexation of Crimea.
Yeah.
But Hong Kong is taking part of it, and they're Chinese.
Right.
So there are factions that are complying and factions that aren't. So it'll be interesting how this all plays out because, for one, this keeps getting delayed. It wasn't fully enacted July 1st.
Okay.
And now they're speculating it won't be fully enacted till July 1st, 2016. But just like it reminds me of Obamacare, our last week's topic, of how they keep pushing things down the road and you have to comply, but during this window. And if you don't comply right now, then you have this window next. And so not everyone's on board yet, but the threats and of non-compliance are pretty strong, are strong enough that most entities will comply in the long run. So,
yeah, and again, according to Wikipedia, it looks like it's just kind of implementation that's slowing this down a bit. According to a blurb in their wiki entry, on April 2nd, 2014, Treasury and the IRS extended from April 25th, 2014 to May 5th, 2014, the deadline by which an FFI must register with the IRS in order to appear on the initial public list of global intermediary identification numbers, which is GIIN, that's an acronym, maintained by the IRS, also known as the FFI list. In June 2014, the IRS began publishing a monthly online list of FFIs intended to allow withholding agents to verify the GIINs of their payees in order to establish that withholding is not required on payments to those payees. So it's kind of, you know, like anything in government, it just doesn't happen. You know, these types of laws or implementation of legislation just doesn't happen quickly, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So should we just play a clip to get the ball rolling and then talk more detailed?
Yep. And this is kind of like an onion-like clip using satire to explain FATCA, but it's pretty funny.
Bring a little fun into the mix for a boring topic.
Yeah, exactly. It's about 4.5 minutes long, so I'll go ahead and play the clip.
All right. Good afternoon, and welcome to the United States Treasury Department November FATCA Q&A session for every non-U.S. bank in the world and every non-U.S. country in the world. In honor of Obama's Open Government Initiative, we're going to be taking questions today in instant message format.
So, to kick it off, what is FATCA?
Well, basically, we don't like the way that you have been handling taxes for American citizens in all of your countries. So, we're going to put the United States Internal Revenue Service in charge. If your banks choose not to cooperate with us, we're going to impose a 30% withholding tax on any activities undertaken by that bank and any of that bank's customers, whether they're American citizens or not.
Wait, what? How can you do that?
15 aircraft carriers, that's how. You're living in our world, bitches. Get used to it.
Okay. Can you talk more about what withholding tax means?
Oh, sure. It's just withholding. It's a lot like U.S. income tax withholding, except you don't get any services in return, and there are no refunds.
That sounds terrible. How do we avoid this?
It's easy. All you have to do is just give us any information you have about accounts for U.S. citizens.
Oh, sorry, there's one more thing. Because you're going to have to prove to us that you don't have any U.S. accounts, you're probably just going to have to give us all of the information from all of your accounts.
What? That's ridiculous.
Why? We're great with private information. Just ask Edward Snowden.
How can you possibly think this is okay?
Because we own your asses. Free ride's over, f***. Do you have any idea how much it pisses us off when people don't do things our way? We've been carrying the free world for 50 goddamn years, and it is time we got paid.
This seems very familiar, but there's absolutely no way this works with our privacy legislation.
Oh, that's not a problem. For rich countries like yourselves, we are happy to sign an agreement under which you agree to force your banks to give you the information, which you will then send to us.
I guess that's possible. You will, of course, give us information on our citizens' bank accounts in the U.S., right?
Well, that's certainly what the agreement will say.
But good luck getting our bankers and their congressmen to agree to that.
Oh mein Gott, diese Amerikaner spinnen doch.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Oh yeah, that reminds me of something. All of your banks are going to have to sign individual agreements with the IRS in English. And then fill out a whole bunch of forms with us in English.
But we have got tons of American legal and accounting professionals who are eager to work with you.
For just $500 an hour.
But what about emerging economies like us? Our tax ministry and banks can't really afford this sort of thing. I mean, Africa's growing and all, but this could really slow us down.
Well, then get used to only banking in Africa, f***. See, banking is a rich man's game, and we kind of like the idea of keeping it to ourselves. We got a system, and we're going to set it up right.
Interesting.
What the f***, China? You want some of this?
Oh, not at all. We love it. A one-world taxation system run by the most powerful country is a great idea.
That's right. A one-world system run by the United States of America.
For now. Mm.
Is that the end of it?
That is.
Yeah, it sheds a lot of light on the whole issue. But what's surprising to me is this is going to divide friendly nations, and it's really going to end up uniting foes against us. And so really this is another mechanism of dividing the world up. And to me, this is just the stupidest law that could ever be enacted. It's just asking for countries to avoid using the dollar and other banking institutions to quit using the dollar. And while our dollar's influence has been waning somewhat, that this is just another shot in our foot.
So what do you think when looking at FATCA, to me, it seems like, well, someone or a group of individuals, either, within the government or a lobby, is like, we're losing tax revenue from people and corporations, who choose, to either earn money, out of the United States or move money that they've earned in the United States into shell corporations or, individual accounts out of the country, which can accrue interest or additional funds. So Kirk, what do you think we talked about this a little bit before the show. It seems like the cost of implementation, when you compare it to how much revenue is actually going to be gained, is suspect at best, right?
Yeah, so it just shows how laws are spun. I mean, they sell it on, these rich people using it as tax havens. And then if you threaten to repeal this law, it's, you're just helping the rich out. You're just helping these people that are trying to not pay their taxes. It doesn't even dive into the whole reasoning behind the measures why should we even be taxing all this income when someone lives outside the United States? Why should we even be taxing that person and taking that money back home here that does nothing to where they're living? And go ahead, Chelsea.
Oh, well, and I mean, on top of all of the, financial ramifications and the philosophy behind, do we capture more revenue or what do we do here or there? the fact that we feel entitled to tax people that aren't in the aren't within our jurisdiction is just another example of our arrogance and overreach. I mean, we see ourselves playing, you know, the global like peacemaker or whatever. We feel entitled to send troops into all these other countries, and now we're taking that to a financial level. And the fact that we feel like we're entitled to go into someone else's country and say, look, this is how you're going to do it, or you're going to pay the price for it, and you have to comply with our the legislative decisions that have been made within our country, is just quite an overreach. And I can't believe that, you know, the world isn't up in arms about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you go down a list of specifically European countries, but South American to a lesser extent, there doesn't seem to be a lot of resistance to this. You know, maybe it's because of political lobbying within those countries. It's hard for me to know. But you know, outside of the typical foes of the United States, it seems like most countries are more than eager to get on board with the legislation and, you know, enforce the law.
Yeah, but what you're talking about is positive law, and positive law only, each law that's created creates loopholes.
Right.
And so it's legal to get around it. Mm-hmm. And then they have to create new laws to stop these other loopholes. This is just a continuation in a way of our positive tax law in the United States. But other countries are glad to do it because they face the same problem of people that are why would I keep my money here? If I travel a lot, why not have bank accounts here? And if it makes interest, who cares? What does that have, how does that harm the other countries? And when we talked to, I think this was before, about current U.S. corporations that when they make money offshore, they leave it over there because as soon as they take it back, they're faced with the taxation. And so there's trillions of dollars out there that could come back if they just would tax it at a fair rate instead of the high corporate tax that we have. Like, we have some of the highest corporate tax in the world. And so, yeah, these corporations are doing things legally. It's just in the sense of if you think America deserves, or the United States deserves, a certain percentage of every transaction in the world, or, you know, of its citizens, its corporations, this is unethical in government stance. So when you see these other socialist Western countries, yeah, they're all for this because they want to do the same thing, but they couldn't enact a law like this. That's the thing. Only America could with the reserve dollar.
So an act of reciprocity, essentially, a reciprocal treatment of, you know, expats from, let's say, France or in the United States, or United States or in France, et cetera. So you have a scheme which can allow for more tax revenue overall. That's essentially what you're saying.
Yeah, I to me, it's like you said earlier, this will never recoup the money that we gain back. So all this is control. This is how they want to control the situation. It's a new form of global governance, and it's a form of furthering global governance. And the worst thing is it's worldwide surveillance, to where
financial surveillance, right?
Well, they surveil every form of communication already now, and then now they're gonna. This is one way to survey every financial transaction, and it's just like what that clip said earlier. That how does the IRS know that who's American, who's not? So yes, they are going to have to reveal every single individual that's in the bank. And so this is a way it's a bonanza for the government to have such a wide surveillance of new ways of blackmail and other forms of coercion that any superpower would just drool over getting this kind of power.
Well, what's interesting is that they're not, you know, they're not asking for information on people that are actually making money. It's not based on revenues or income. It's just based on, you know, money over a certain threshold just existing in that area.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there could be a lot of people that maybe had, you know, fears or concerns about, you know, the state of, you know, the economy in the United States or what's going to happen to the dollar. And they just wanted to have maybe a little security. I mean, there's something in finance called systemic risk. And systemic risk, instead of, you know, focusing on one stock or another, you know, it's the risk of the entire market. And, you know, they could say, well, I feel like, it's, you know, I don't have diversification systemically. So maybe I want some, you know, some more protection for maybe my retirement or the wealth that I've accumulated or the savings that I've accumulated by saying I don't want every single piece of that. I don't want 100% of that to be in the dollar. I want to, you know, provide a little bit more security and diversify my risk a little bit more than that. And it doesn't necessarily even mean that it's making interest. It's or that they have a business and they're making all sorts of income that they're not paying tax on. I mean, it's just based on, do you have more than, you know, X amount of dollars in a foreign bank account? If so, then we want to know about it. To me, that's an unreasonable search and seizure.
Yeah, and it sets the groundwork for future legislation. All of a sudden, if you're, if they think you're, all of a sudden, you're an enemy of the state and you're leaving the country, oh, we won't let you do that. We know you have money off hold. You'll never come back. Or it's a... There's just so many avenues of control mechanisms that are in place from this that it's just disgusting. And what the most disgusting thing is, we're not even out there paying for this. We're forcing all the world to comply with this, and everyone has to bear the burden. So now the costs of all these banking institutions, financial institutions, are going to have to pass these costs on to their consumers and pass it on, because these financial institutions in the world, who do you think the majority of their customers are? Americans? No. They're their own population, their own neighbors. And so their costs of that, of doing business there, is going to end up on worldwide citizens of the, you know, wherever they may reside.
Yeah, that's true. Danny, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, it's good that we're kind of talking about, like, you know, the financial implications and all that, but let's talk about, like, you know, the non-financial implications. I mean, you know, I think FINRA, which is the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, which is a private corporation that kind of acts as, you know, similar to, you know, other regulatory authorities like the Securities Exchange Commission and all that. I don't really know much more details beyond that. But, you know, they estimate that, you know, they're taking in about $800 million a year in revenues for implementing cost of doing that. You know, they, you know, even through the Ways and Committee.
Danny,
what's that?
Real quick, I just had an audio drop about 20 seconds ago. So if you want to back up 20 seconds, if you can.
20 seconds. Okay. So basically, just going back, you know, what is the cost of implementing the FATCA Act? I mean, you know, they estimate about $800 million in revenues, but what is the cost? You know, the House of Ways and Means Committee didn't even budget this, you know. So it just seems like, hey, you know what, $800 million, let's, you know, it's good. You know, who cares about the cost? You know, let's do it. So it's like, you know, you would think that, you know, at least it would at least budget whether, you know, budget whether this is, you know, beneficial, you know, to do like a cost benefit analysis to do this. But, you know, they're not even doing that. So, I mean, is, you know, receiving these tax loss revenues, is that really the point of what we're doing here with the FATCA Act, or is there something beyond that? You know, maybe we're trying to look, you know, into individuals that have, you know, it's not just like the receiving these dollar amounts, but, you know, maybe there's some type of shady activities that they're doing, and, you know, maybe, you know, the U.S. is trying to monitor that. I mean, obviously, you know, we, all these foreign financial institutions, they need to also provide, you know, information from, you know, other non-U.S. citizens to, you know, do that completeness and accuracy check to make sure that, you know, they we have a completeness and accuracy of all the individuals who bank with that individuals to bank with that financial institution to see, okay, are all the U.S. citizens captured, you know? So is that, you know, is the money really important, or is there something more to it that, you know, we're trying to find out, you know? So I don't know. That's kind of where I think, you know, I don't think the money implication, the revenues is what is, I mean, obviously we're going to lose a lot of money from this. And they didn't even budget this. I mean, it's like, you know, if they're not budgeting this, it's not about the tax revenues. It's, I think there's something that we're trying to fish out.
That's pretty interesting, Danny. So, I mean, basically what, I mean, if I'm following you correctly, what you're suggesting is that this is a data collection exercise where, you know, costs might have been identified, but there's been no budget approved, but there is a, you know, there are additional motives other than just capturing revenue, right?
Right. And, you know, that's from my understanding, that's all what FATCA is just to do data collection, to collect all the data of all the people who are, you know, have foreign asset, you know, assets in foreign, you know, banks and things like that. And, you know, it's not like, you know, we're, you know, the IRS is trying to, you know, obviously they'll try to collect what they can, but I don't think that's their main motive. You know, obviously, you know, with the U.S. treasury, U.S. debt is like, what, $17.7 trillion. And, you know, with $800 million coming in a year, it's like, you know, we're playing with peanuts right now. Right. So, and, you know, I think the U.S. knows that, you know, they're not dumb people. They're, you know, they're smart, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's other motives besides just tax revenues, you know, especially when, you know, they don't even care about doing a cost benefit analysis of, you know, implementing this. You know, there's something besides just financial or money related stuff.
So, AKA surveillance to a certain extent, like Kirk was suggesting earlier.
Yeah.
And I think Kirk, that was one of the more interesting aspects of the legislation that you picked up, right? The FATCA.
Yeah.
Now, what I think is interesting is that as we move into the 21st century, you know, we had this, while there were always exceptions to the rules and ways that maybe that people could work around it, it was fairly clear what it meant or what people were going for when we had the Fourth Amendment, you know, against unreasonable search and seizure. Here you are, you're looking through my car, you're looking through my house, through my pockets. You know, but now that we have this electronic age, you know, if you read up on the way that the courts are, you know, coming down on was this a search, was this a seizure, when they talk about electronic data, the cornerstone for deciding whether or not you need a warrant in order to do a search is based on whether somebody could reasonably expect privacy. And so when you talk about that, you say, well, should I reasonably be able to expect privacy in where I have my money invested? Or should I reasonably expect privacy when sending an email? And more it seems like the courts are coming down to say, no, you shouldn't expect privacy in your social media. You shouldn't expect privacy in your Google searches. You shouldn't be expecting privacy electronically. And more it's coming down. And anything electronic that the courts are coming down and saying, well, you shouldn't expect privacy, therefore we don't need a warrant in order to do a search. We can do these searches at any point in time. Now, what I don't understand is why somebody couldn't reasonably expect privacy just because something's no longer on a piece of paper. It's now electronic or things of that nature. So I just don't understand why this isn't something that, you know, the government wouldn't need a warrant for. They wouldn't need probable cause in order to investigate these things, that they can just do a blanket request for all of this information in absence of any probable cause or, you know, obtaining a warrant.
Yeah, the FBI director just is fuming that Apple dared in their new operating system to what's the word? I can't think of it right now. Encrypt all the users' information to where so the government can never access it, and the government's pissed about it. They think it's an outrageous act for a company to do that. And it's just hilarious that they think that they deserve to know everything.
Sounds like you had some thoughts as well, Danny.
Yeah, I was going to just respond to Chelsea's comment. So, you know, I think it's just, you know, you mentioned that, you know, why there's no privacy on, you know, social media and anything that's done electronic. I mean, it's basically, you know, it's things that, you know, we can't see. You know, as opposed to, you know, doing like a warrant, you know, for cops to, you know, search your house, you know, obviously we can see that there's a house. So, you know, there's that way there's, you know, we can do a warrant for that. But, you know, in terms of social media, anything internet wise and things like that, it's, you know, we can't see it. So, you know, and, you know, obviously there's people that there are very skilled hackers out there that, you know, can extract all this information. And, you know, maybe the government, I'm sure the government hires these people to, you know, to, you know, help extract data and things like that. And, you know, if, you know, if the, you know, electronic things, you know, social media, I mean, that's another type of thing. So, you know, we want to regulate that. Maybe, I don't know, there's probably new laws probably need to be implemented to, you know, to safekeep these type of information. But, you know, I don't think the government wants to do that either. So
we don't need new laws.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Kirk.
Here's the thing, though.
Social media, you're using company services. And to utilize that, they're taking that's their business model is to get your information. And it's the stupid citizens of our – it's the retarded Americans that want to just give that information to these companies.
Let's not focus on social media, though. I mean, okay, so forget I said social media, and let's just focus on email, okay? Email. Let's do that.
So email is...
I pay for Microsoft Outlook. Let's say that I did. And I'm paying for this product so that I can send emails to, you know, the people that I want to send them to, and I'm specifying who I'm communicating with. I'm not giving that information to anybody else. I password protect it. I should have every reasonable right to expect privacy. And if I expect that I have privacy in my email, then that, you know, for them to search my email without obtaining a warrant violates the Fourth Amendment. Now, I get if you're posting something on Facebook or whatever, I get it. You know, there's a certain amount of understanding of what it's become. But I wouldn't say that that was the original business model. But what about, you know, searching the internet or whatever activities I have? You know, it sort of, it goes back to, and I can't remember, maybe you guys will remember more clearly, whether it was legal, like if I go to the library and check out books, for them to be able to search what books I've checked out in the past 10 years. Was that legal? Because if that wasn't legal, I don't see how obtaining my, you know, my queries online is legal.
It was fairly legal. They might have still had to get a warrant.
And that's the difference. If they had to get a warrant.
I don't recall. But the laws have changed. We're in a time of war on terrorism. Our constitutional rights have been usurped and thrown out the window. And so it's these new laws that have been passed that grant them the access to do these things. And the thing is that people just need to go out there. If you want protection for your emails or communication, there's ways to encrypt everything you do. But it takes work and it's an inconvenience. And most people aren't willing to do those kind of things because it's so much easier to use these free services that it's and quicker. But that's the trade-off.
Saying I have to have, you know, a safe with 10 different locks on it that nobody could crack into in order to be assured that nobody is going to search me, even though the Constitution deems that the government cannot do that. Without a warrant, without probable cause, and you need probable cause.
Yeah, but
and in absence of that, they're not allowed to do it.
This is what I had written down. This whole thing, it's the whole mindset of the government. It's owners and slaves. We are all just slaves. We're citizens to the government. They're the elite, the monarchs. We don't mean anything anymore, and so we've been regressing ever since the Constitution was enacted and the Bill of Rights were put forth to the world this country, America, has these rights. And we shun the rest of the world. And since then, the rest of the world has infiltrated America to get back to that that top-down structure. The call it monarchs, call it whatever controlling system, owners, slaves, whatever. It's it really that is the basis of it. Because most all positive law now is everything's illegal until we grant you rights to do it. Licensure or stuff like that. Now everything's illegal and everything you do, even though if you didn't, purchase your license to do that, then we should have access to it, your other freedoms, i.e. email, books you rent, or any other private property or any human interaction that you partake in life. And that's, to me, that this law really shines a light on that mentality of the owner-slave mentality of the government that the United States holds.
Kirk, do you know what's coming right now?
The what?
Do you know what's coming right now?
I kind of have an idea.
Do you?
Yeah, I want to hear it. Hey, once it has to happen.
It does have to happen at least once.
How about can we play another clip?
Yeah, you had a good clip from Nigel Green of the DeVere Group.
Yeah, right? It's another one against FATCA.
Yeah,
but I think it's good. It's a business, and I think people enjoy it.
Okay, I'll roll the clip.
My name's Nigel Green, and I'm the CEO of the DeVere Group. I've recently been quoted in the press as saying that FATCA is horrific. FATCA is horrific. It's horrific for American expatriates, and I believe it's horrific for the American economy. What sounded like a noble idea, we will tax expats around the world that are avoiding taxation, has in fact become a nightmare. Why? Well, what have they done? The American government have decided that every bank around the world, every insurance company around the world, has to report transactions made by US citizens or anybody connected with the US. So if you've got a US wife, you're connected, that means that your transactions have got to be reported. Of course, this is extremely costly. The cost to banks is estimated to be in several billions of dollars every single year. What are banks doing? Okay, well, banks and insurance companies are seeking to avoid taking on American clients. It means that I'm seeing American expatriates refused bank accounts. I'm seeing American expatriates finding it extremely difficult to get a mortgage. FATCA, you see, sounds good. But then again, so does communism. That sounds like a great idea. We'll spread everything equally. Okay, the reality, of course, is that it doesn't work. And you know the strange thing is? There is very little money that the US government are going to be claiming. When you actually look at the facts and you look at the figures, there's 7 million expatriates around the world that should be declaring their money to the US government. Okay, well, from my findings, I would estimate that 96% do. So we're talking about a very small percentage that actually don't pay tax. Do you know, American corporations, however, make their money in Europe, make their money around the world, companies like Google, Starbucks, companies that are like Apple, have done very well, been very, very successful. They build up lots of money. And in what I believe is a correct structure, they earn their money, and in a tax-efficient manner, they build up that capital in places like Luxembourg.
Do you know the crazy thing, though? They can't take their money back to the US. And the reason they can't take their money back to the US is that the US government, if they bring it back, will make them pay huge amounts of tax. So there is estimated to be well over $1 trillion in bank accounts for US corporations that sat in places around the world that can't be brought to them back to America because of the taxation. Okay, what should they do? Well, I believe they should leave the US expat alone, or think of a simpler solution if they really want to chase a few expatriates around the world. And they should look at the companies that are quite rightly structured correctly, that have over $1 trillion in bank accounts, which could, if they reduce tax, maybe to 5%, be brought back into the US economy. That would create huge revenue, and at the same time would mean that money coming back to the economy could be used for great use and to accelerate the growth that America is currently seeing. Expats around the world, American expats, are rightly furious. They're rightly furious that they are the ones that have been discriminated against. People that pay tax properly and correctly, they're the ones that are being discriminated by their own government. What can be done about it? Well, as a company, we advise people on how they can invest their money into tax-efficient solutions. So American expatriates that are interested in at least mitigating their tax or want to know how to report it properly, by all means, come to my website, which is www.nigel-green.com.
So, leave the U.S. expat alone was the moral to that video that I heard.
But since we won't, let's go to nigelgreen.com so he can
and sell you some services.
Well, that, and then it also really, it really supported what you were saying, Danny, about, look, the financial incentive really isn't there. It's not going to be that beneficial to our economy or our tax collection. So what is it really?
Exactly. I don't know. I think it's like going back to the surveillance monitoring of, you know, these individuals and probably even other individuals as well. But, you know, that's just my thought.
And it'll be interesting to see if, you know, who knows, if there's enough revenue extracted or funds extracted. There's the free market has an interesting way of providing solutions to problems. So anonymizing, or you know, using cryptocurrencies, or you know, things like that, or encrypting your transactions on the marketplace. To me, it just seems, you know, it seems to me like the smart money will figure out a way to insulate themselves from this type of legislation eventually, right? You don't accrue money by being, you know, by being dumb.
I see it completely different. Mm-hmm. I really just think it's us being spoiled Americans. I think mm-hmm. we're all ignorant and blind, and we really have no idea how good we have it in America. And it's really built on sand as a house of cards. We live in a fantasy land of self-gratification and just want the party to continue at any cost. And that these costs are being ignored of all the new positive laws that they have to enact on us and now the world, that are revealing the attitude of the government and the new global governance mindset. And we're just completely inebriated and oblivious to the destruction of the world happening right now. And that all this is – and when I say spoiled Americans, I say we're spoiled because of the reserve currency is the dollar. And there's no reason that that has to be there. So now with all this happening, if any other country – and you just talked about business sense. These are all financial institutions. So they're going to start looking for other options that are available. available. Why would you want to deal with the dollar when we have so many trillions in debt that it is impossible, mathematically impossible, to ever pay it off? We're borrowing money just to pay interest on the debt we owe. Our unfunded liabilities are five times our national debt. And then, so it's just creating new problems, like you said, Eric, for new solutions. And the new solution is not going to be the dollar. And when the dollar collapses, it's going to be the biggest catastrophe the world has ever seen, ever. And it is going to rock us as spoiled Americans, and it's going to really rock a lot of the world at the same time. And it's a damning fact, but it's the reality of the situation. And that this law makes absolutely no sense. It's not going to bring any revenue. And all it does is make other people want other entities in the world find other solutions that's going to cause the destruction of the dollar to even be more fast-paced. And to me, this has to be on purpose. It makes no sense. It's if you were a foreign government and you wanted to overthrow the superpower of America, you couldn't do it military. You could only do it financially. And this is, and we're doing it to ourselves here. And then can you just put ourselves in 20, 30, 40 years ago, when at the height of the Cold War, communist China? What if one of these countries passed this law and said that this to America? Or worse yet, what if Nazi Germany won World War II and then started enacting, passed this law on America? What would we be saying? What would we be doing as Americans to get around it? We would do exactly what I'm talking about, find other avenues, cryptocurrencies, new forms of reserve currencies in the world, other just trading them amongst countries. And that's why I said in the beginning, this is only going to unite the foes of against this Western banking dollar reserve currency system. And it's going to be very damning and very destructive. And it's, this might happen really fast. The faster this law gets enacted, the faster it's going to happen. And it's disgusting. That's why Russia and Brazil and China, or these BRIC countries, are started their own little IMF type banking system, and they're finding ways to get around it. And like you were saying earlier, how Russia and China are trying to not comply with this as best as possible. And there is no way the world's going to sit there and just allow this to happen when the dollar, what there is no basis behind it. It's an invention, and it's completely the only thing it helps is certain other corporations and what I said earlier, the monarchs of the world that deal with the dollar, that know how to deal with this currency, and us as Americans, we get propped up by it, and we're oblivious to the harmful effects in the world from it. And it's going to – so the oblivious people are the ones that are going to get hurt in the long run, is my point, and sorry for being a downer.
Well, I guess – the thing for me, and maybe you guys can help me with this, is that let's say the dollar does collapse in a big way, and I'm not saying that I don't think it's going to happen. I'm saying what I want to know is who benefits from that? Who would benefit from the dollar collapsing, and how would they benefit? I mean, what would be the incentive to make sure that that happened?
A new world government, a new world currency set up by the super elite that are trying to do such things right now?
George Soros would benefit, definitely.
He does like to trade in Forex a bit.
And there's all these entities that already exist that want to deal with this false system. So there's a lot of countries out there that don't want to do it. So what's the perfect thing? To unite our foes with each other and create this havoc to where our populace is screaming for new costs, new measures, new war, more bombs to go and stop these people from that are actually talking about common sense things. But no, we need to keep our propped up false reality, this fantasy land we live in, going, because our lives are so meaningful that we're so great as Americans that we have we're a democracy, we're free. Bullshit. It's so controlled, it's crazy. But it's what we all know something's about happening. And what why we've been poking Russia for the last years? We've talked about this on previous podcasts. We've heard, you hear on other podcasts, other topics, how, you know, they want this new World War III to happen. And this is a great mechanism to divide people and to create sides and have a new big war. And the winner will probably end up being us again, but it's going to be a totally different system, and we're going to feel the brunt of it at the same time, and then it's going to be world governments, but. That's the true lone wolf right there, Eric.
that's the lone wolf.
I was going to say that might not be the only one earlier. But that's why I just think this is the most damning act I've ever heard of. To me, this is worse than Obamacare. This is the absolute worst thing we could do to expedite the destruction of the dollar.
Right?
I would love 10, 15, 20 more years to prepare myself, being fairly young, and to preserve myself and get away from this tyranny coming down on us. But I don't think there's going to be much time. But, I mean, Chelsea, when you talked about the destruction of the dollar, it's – if you look at who would think about stuff like that too would be people like environmentalists. There would be massive chaos, massive starvation in the world. The whole world system would grind to a halt for a while. These cities that have millions of people cannot sustain themselves. It's massive deconstruction of the world to get back to whatever utopia that these whacked out tyrannical people see. And the only way to combat this is intellectual leaders in the world preaching the mindset of things like being sovereign and common law is what really appeals to me. I think there's no better system out there and being self-reliant and getting to the true roots of sustainable living. And that's this law and other things that our government is doing is going away from anything sustainable. And there's just no way we are not insulated from things that have happened in the past. Countries, world, superpowers come and go, and to think that we're going to be here forever is very ignorant, in my opinion. And it's just, I don't see how our media has ever even talked about this. Have you ever even seen a news clip talked about this law?
I haven't,
even around July 1st.
No, I think. From what I've gathered, you know, Danny, and it makes sense to me, and you've mentioned this. I didn't really pick it up. I'm not going to speak for Chelsea at all, but it seems, more of an act of surveillance than anything else, right? You know, when you're talking about FACA.
Yes.
So.
But at the same time, what's the cost of that surveillance? We're already surveying our friends
in Europe, cost.
I mean, through the NSA.
In the grand scheme, it's, you know, if it costs $800 million or, you know, a few billion dollars, you know, it's a large figure, but
but the cost I'm saying is not financial. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about costs of society, costs on the world stage, costs of the loss of sovereignty and the production of tyranny. And this leads us far towards tyranny than anything sovereign.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, no, I totally agree. That's, it's just tyranny. It's, you know, we're trying to obviously be the world police and, whether for good motives or bad motives, we got to stay out of it. I'm not sure, you know, if this will help, you know, catch terrorists of some sort, you know, maybe terrorist financing and things like that. But, you know, again, like one of the other clips that they discussed, you know, this is a still in a relatively small population of people that is affecting it. You know, we're still going, you know, full fledged of this. You know, there's a new IRS form for, you know, doing this. And, you know, people need to be trained and all that to kind of get all this compliance rolling, things like that. It's also unnecessary for just, you know, a few population of individuals. So, again, it's, you know, it's kind of goes back to, you know, the policing of the world. So that's basically what I want to add. So.
Well, and I just don't get, like, I'm still just trying to figure out what would be the motive. Like, what's the payoff here? Because obviously we've talked about there's a lot of administrative costs and time and effort that's being put into this. And what's the payoff? I mean, I know we say surveillance, but surveillance is a means to an end, not the end. So what's the end here that you guys see? Is it just a matter of expanding power of the government and decreasing our personal rights and liberties and freedoms? Is that what it is? Is it just a movement towards a government with more power? Is the end power? Is that what it is? Or is there a financial incentive? That's what I'm trying to maybe wrap my brain around.
And like I kind of just said, maybe they're doing this for good intentions. Maybe there are individuals who, you know, are sheltering money to finance terrorists. So we're kind of going towards, you know, Bank Secrecy Act territory. But, you know, maybe that's what some of these individuals are doing. And maybe the government is trying to catch these individuals. I don't know. I'm sure that's part of a reason. But, you know, I feel like there's still a lot of costs are outweighing the benefits of doing this. So, I don't know. That's kind of my take on, you know, a potential positive of this. So I'm not sure what you guys think of.
I see.
Well, I would just assume that if it were, you know, terrorist in nature, that it wouldn't necessarily be U.S. citizens to target, right? I mean, you can have if you're in a terroristic organization and then you know about FATCA, you say, well, we'll just make sure that the people with the money who own the assets aren't the people who have obtained U.S. citizenship, and then you're fine. You know, so, I mean, I wouldn't see that, like you said, if the IRS is filled with pretty smart people, they're going to know that that wouldn't be an effective tool to try and identify terrorist groups.
Yeah, but this law is still fluid. This is not just a set-in-stone law that's going to always be there. This is going to be something that's going to be changed yearly, bi-yearly, quite often, and as it's going to make a lot of wrinkles, and it's going to try to, and they're going to always try and iron it out. One YouTube clip I was watching was this girl that got the letter from her bank about this FATCA. She was over in Hong Kong and reading about it, and it said there in it that this is going to change probably a lot, and then we're going to still have to comply with it all the time, and this is what the rule is now, and this is going to change in the future too. So,
did you send that clip over or no?
I did not. It was okay. It was just a homemade type of very unprofessional. But it was pretty informative and a little bit. She was just kind of reading through it, what the, you know, the letters being sent in other foreign countries, you know, and it's a shocking thing that I think other countries know far more about this and their citizens than we as Americans do, and this is coming from America. And I think people like Putin, you know, through Russia and all these countries that don't want to comply are really choosing their actions very carefully right now. I think they're going to wait till the last, you know, delay as long as possible, comply here and there with certain things. But I think people really, a lot of other countries out there that America views as foes in the world, anti-Western philosophy, or governance that these people are really concerned about this, and they see that there's a lot of action going on in the world right now through Ukraine, through the Middle East, through Africa, and that stuff, cards are being aligned in order. And so there's a lot of things going around right now. And so that's why when we talked about Ukraine, that certain actions, you know you're going to get these results. And so none of that really made sense other than we wanted to poke Russia. And now this action is going to cause certain results also. So this, to me, it just does nothing but divide, and you find out your enemies. And I think that there's future plans and actions in place that are going to, to weaken these people that don't participate. But in the long run, I think all this does is really weaken the Western form of governments, especially here in America with our dollar reserve currency. And it's going to – I worry about the future. I've worried about the dollar's future. And now with this FATCA and the more information and it's even more worrisome. But does anyone else have anything want to chime in? You got anything, Eric?
It'll be interesting to see how, I think I alluded to it earlier. I mean, there are ways that you can protect yourself, even if you're, an expat in a foreign country, can protect yourself from having your financial transactions visible. To me, that seems to be an opportunity for the free market to provide.
But that brings up a good point, though. Yeah. Is that do you really want to hide it? I mean, is that really why you're an expat, to go and hide your money that you've accumulated, assets you've accumulated?
There are a number of reasons.
Or is it just to get out of the system? And the system is now chasing these people down, and this is just one form of doing it. That, to me, that's why people would want to be an expat, is to just get away from all the rules and regulation, to go out and live free, and whatever assets you have to live on, fine. And like that guy said, his estimation was 96% of the people still comply, because most people do comply with the rules and legislation. Sure. But none of this makes sense to go and collect these untaxed income generated yearly. But it's I can definitely see people would try and escape it, and whatever, it's people do what they would do, but it's, to me, that's the excuse for this law. And usually what they're waving at you has nothing to do with the reality of it. And so that is the excuse. That's the shiny silver dollar that they're waving in their hand, keeping your attention while they're meddling with their hands elsewhere. And that's really what this law reveals to me. And it's, I think there's unintended consequences galore going to happen to this, but
it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. It's in its infancy, and will it stick? It looks like there are a lot of moving parts to the enforcement and implementation of it. Will it be there in 5 or 10 years, or will people find ways to, probably like you said, Kirk, are there, there'll probably be loopholes available for, utilize good accountants, and, you may not be impacted too much by it. And that's how it always works, right? I mean, Danny or Chelsea can probably agree with that. If you have good enough accountants, you're gonna identify the loopholes in the legislation, and you're gonna protect your assets as much as you can, right?
I'd agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's how loopholes are always being developed, because, accounting and tax accounting, I mean, these are all, accounting is an art, it's not, it's not really exact science. So, there's always going to be loopholes and things like that. And, these people who spend, you know, their lives, you know, as, you know, the tax accountants, especially foreign tax accountants, to do this, you know, there's going to be a ways around it. So, I mean, that's what they're getting paid for.
Yep. They're getting paid well, especially if you have millions of dollars to protect. You know, those individuals are, you know, the people with, you know, less amount of money are going to have more difficult time than people who are able to pay, you know, highly competent tax professionals to identify loopholes and protect their assets. So, you know, my take on this legislation is dubious at best. We'll see what happens. You know, to me, I think the moral, at least to this conversation, you know, you guys may agree or disagree, is that this seems, I mean, it seems in finance, especially when you're talking about financial transactions, it seems to be a way to surveil. That seems to be the most interesting information that's available based on this legislation. You know, and you know, the most interesting assets will find a way to cloak that data, I believe. So to me, it seems like it's an exercise in futility. Maybe not. Maybe it'll be great on the part of intelligence agencies and IRS and Treasury or whatever. But it seems to me to be kind of an expensive, futile effort for the most part.
Yeah, I just wish we could get away from the mindset of the jealousy of people's money. Right. And, I mean, it's their money. Who cares? We have no business acquiring any of it through theft of legal or illegal means. And the legal would be the governance, and the legal is theft. Both immoral and should be preached. And America, the only reason this is an argument is because of our tax structure in the first place. A lot of countries don't even tax their citizens of their country if they live in America and work here. And so the best way to defeat this to me would be to repeal the forms of taxation that just because you're an American that you have to still pay American income taxes or whatever interest. Taxation, whatever the correct form of terminology would be, but there are people, I know the Republican Party is trying to put a stop to this, and it'll just be hilarious to watch it happen, how the, you know, the press will just eat them alive for trying to stop this. Even, you know, the true nuts and bolts of the case will never be debated. It'll just be, oh, trying to protect the rich. So, but I would encourage anyone that wanted to fight this is to fight the whole taxation system in the first place. But with that, hope you've had fun. Hopefully we've learned a little about FATCA, and hopefully maybe this could lead into another topic of forms of the legality of taxation in the first place. But time will tell, and thank you for being with us. This has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 30, and see you next time.
See you next time.
Adios, mofo.